Create Abundance Now.
Hello, I'm Daryl.
And I'm Roxanne.
And we're Create Abundance Now.
We're here to share,
teach, learn,
and spread knowledge
and healing
to the world through our work as coaches
and trainers
and BBS hosts.
That's right. We're all about knowledge and transformation.
That's right. Hey, Daryl, wouldn't it be great to talk a little bit about some of the projects we're doing as coaches and hypnotherapists?
Yes.
Some of the things we've got coming up.
Yeah, we got some great ideas lately we've been thinking about. We're going to be integrating some music.
Along with hypnosis, right.
And
we've got some studio time coming up this week, actually.
That's right.
To put some of that together.
We're working through our Roxanne's wonderful voice.
Thank you very much.
With my creative keyboard kind of stuff. Like you heard earlier with John Siri, that's what we play. I've been doing some of that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
Working with sound vibrations, and we're going to actually combine the two. For healing.
For healing, that's right. And a lot of the work that we do when we bring our energy together to put the project together, we actually find it helpful to be in a semi-hypnotic state. We're open more to the energies of the universe and spirit and the unconscious mind.
Or the subconscious mind.
If you will. Mm-hmm. Which gives us all the knowledge we really need for those projects. By the way, everybody, you can go to our website at createabundancenow.net. We've got some events coming up here in the Seattle area, and we're planning on doing some shows soon in the Portland area. And if anybody's interested in our workshops, Create Abundance Now, please let us know. Give us a call. Email us. We are open and available for that. So we have a guest today, Suzanne Kellner of Dawning Visions. Are you there, Suzanne?
Yes, I am.
Awesome.
Hi, Suzanne.
How are you?
Doing fine. How are you guys?
How's Boston?
Warm. Very warm and very sunny.
Oh, it's nice here, too.
Sunny. Really? That's excellent.
It is.
So does that mean that people are a lot less likely to be needing coaching and therapy when it's sunny in Boston?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
I'd rather be out playing in the sun, especially this time of year, I suppose.
Oh, no. You know, I find people need our work any time of the year. Don't you think?
Yeah, generally they do.
Oh,
you're having a problem, aren't you?
Oh, I'm telling you. We've been noticing that there's been a huge influx of people looking for help with smoking and eating disorders lately. And I kind of tend to wonder if it has anything to do with the holidays coming up.
Could be.
No, well,
dealing with
that.
Families and those eating situations and things, sure.
Exactly. So, hey, why don't you give us a little background about yourself, Suzanne? Everybody, Suzanne Kellner's been in the hypnotic arts for a number of years. Correct me, is it 6, 10?
Oh, it's about 7 years now.
7 years, there you go. And she's got a wealth of information to pull from. You've got a background in this, as well as you have an amazing life that you've lived. So do you want to share any of that with us today?
Sure. I came into this work actually via the mental health world.
Okay.
I was working with people with mental illness. I mean, really badly affected people in terms of not being able to work, not being able to go to school, schizophrenics who had thinking disorders and couldn't continue school from like 13 on, things like that. And a lot of times when people have mental illness, they have what's called comorbidity, which means more than one illness.
You might want to speak up just a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
A little bit louder.
And so anyway, what happens is that they find themselves not able to function in a normal sort of way, and they have to go to programs. So I used to work in these programs for the mentally ill.
Uh-huh.
And it was very rewarding work in the sense that I was pretty good at it, considering I didn't have any major licensing or anything like that. My clients got better, many of them.
And you were doing hypnosis?
No, not that. Not at all.
But
the problem that I had, though, was that in a lot of these cases, instead of clients having input into their care, many times they were told what their illnesses were, they were told what they could and couldn't do, and a lot of times they weren't challenged to move outside of those boxes that they were put into with all those lovely little labels we call diagnoses.
That's part and parcel of what happens when people end up part of the medical system, wouldn't you agree? Though the labeling has to occur in order for the FDA to administer the ever-popular drugs that suppress the illness itself, if you will, which is what I am I getting close to what they do that for?
Oh, yeah. They're trying to get rid of the symptomology, and unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
many times what they do is they end up sedating the client, and they wonder why the clients are falling asleep. Well, if you've had to take as many meds as these people, you'd understand why they smoke and why they like Mountain Dew and coffee a lot. We're just trying to keep our heads up.
That was you before hypnosis.
That was before hypnosis, yeah. So, you know, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and so I thought that maybe nursing would be a good thing to do because, you know, you could give out meds and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And because I was still in that mindset, you know, back then. And
yes.
I decided that after going to nursing school for about a year and a half that I really didn't want to become a nurse at all.
There you go.
Because they have a lot of their own issues. I don't know if people have noticed this, but nurses are some of the most stressed out people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They also spend a lot more time on paperwork than on people work. A lot of times now, it's really the tech people who do the work with the folks.
Right.
And so different kind of deal there.
There's an incongruency. Originally, nursing was all about touching.
Yes.
I was a massage therapist for a number of years, and I had a lot of nurses that said to me that they missed that aspect of nursing. They don't actually train nurses nowadays, you know, to have any physical contact with the patients other than help move them from bed to bed.
Well, they can prescribe, or they can administer the meds and sometimes prescribe, depending on how much.
Yeah, but just a simple thing like touching them. They can't have, you know, the basics of human contact.
It's very little now. It really, truly is.
You know,
I mean, sometimes you will. I mean, in the hospital or something, you know.
Right.
But many times it's just layers and layers and layers of paperwork. In fact, I worked in elder care for a number of years in order to get into a nursing school. So I was a home health aide for a while. That means you get paid to bathe people, basically, okay,
mm-hmm.
in their houses. Sort of.
That's a very loving thing to do.
It is, and it does require a therapeutic touch. And,
amen. Mm-hmm.
And it was very necessary part of what was needed to happen because a lot of these people couldn't move around in certain ways, or maybe their minds weren't really there with them anymore, so they couldn't do these things.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I had worked in that field in elder care and hospice care, and while I was doing nursing school, and you should have seen the piles of folders
mm-hmm.
by the desk of my bosses, who are both nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they had to go to the houses and do assessments, and they did some treatment and stuff. But relative to the time they spent on the road doing the treatment, the paperwork was astounding. They said it had multiplied by so many times over the years they had been doing this work, they could not believe it.
Oh, sure.
It was incredible. So, at any rate. But that
so
was,
let's jump forward. Suzanne gets into hypnosis.
So I was still looking for something to do where I could use these skills and talents I had to help folks.
There you go.
And
your God-given love for people.
Yeah, where you could actually affect change without having to use medicine.
Right, and shut down the person's actual personality and that beautiful essence, that energy that makes them themselves, which I think drugs really do.
They do. They can, most definitely, especially the way they're prescribed. And the sicker
yes.
the person is, the more they get prescribed, unfortunately.
Right.
But even more than that, it's the whole concept that the client has their own answer that I really liked about the hypnotic
Me
way
too.
Of doing.
And what we do as coaches, that's right, we embrace them to get in touch with their own answers. We don't create those answers for them. I don't as a coach. I know that Daryl doesn't as a coach, and neither do you.
Absolutely not. That would be totally incongruent with what we're here to do.
That's right. It would be incongruent. Isn't that right, Daryl?
That's right.
Not to mention, you know, you mentioned something when we did our interview on the phone. I was so struck by something you said that just it hit me to my heart. You told me one of the most important things you felt that you brought to your clients was the unconditionality and acceptance. I love that because truly we can't do what we do in the therapy that we provide if we aren't 100% unconditional with everyone that's before us. All we can do is just see them as this pure being of light, and you know, they are where they are. They're doing the best they can with what they have to work with at that time.
Well, there's this whole concept of, well, there's two concepts, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The first concept is that, yes, you have to have unconditional love and regard for your client.
Right.
I believe that to be true. And I always tell my clients, I say, you know, I'm not here to judge you because I wouldn't want you to judge any of the things that I've done in my life, so trust me. We're
mm-hmm.
here just to deal with whatever it is that you're doing that
mm-hmm.
needs to be changed for you to feel better about you, to have
right.
the life that you want to create for you. Because I don't have a say in that either. It's up
no.
to you. It's your goals. It's what you want. And you don't know what those goals are until we go through the process, but they still come from you. And they really, really do like that a whole lot because they're so used to being told what they need to do and, you know, all their diagnostics and all this other stuff.
And when to do it.
When was the last time anyone told you you had your own answers? And they're always shocked about that.
Oh, yeah. There are some people out there that haven't ever been told that.
No, never.
You know, another thing I found just recently, I was working with a client, and she was going through a really bad episode. Just it was a really, really rough time in her life. But, you know, I found that no one had ever given her permission to just, forgive herself. It was a simple thing. She was, you know, had a physical impairment, and we did some therapy, and it was real clear to me that she'd never been told that it was okay to forgive herself. You know, I mean, because we do create physical problems for ourselves in order to put us in a situation where we can have something addressed, right?
Yes, we do that subconsciously, most assuredly, and forgiveness
yep.
work is some of the most important work that needs to get done for folks.
Hypnosis?
Oh,
is that what you said?
The forgiveness work.
Oh, the forgiveness, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it's important for a lot of different reasons. I mean, a lot
yeah.
of times people will come in with all their different problems and they're out there blaming the world for their problems.
Projection.
And, yeah, sometimes other people do cause some issues, you know, especially if you're a kid and you're not being treated well, and that can be a problem. But you also have to forgive yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But along with that, when you have someone who has any kind of disabilities, it doesn't matter what they are, really. They also have to do a grieving process for the loss of that which they can no longer do or maybe could never do.
Oh, very good. That's an excellent point, the grieving process. Very good.
It's very, very important, and I think too often people don't allow themselves to grieve.
I agree.
They need to grieve. So it's forgiveness and grieving. It's both.
There's a point, though, too, where they have to get past the grieving and they have to begin to build again. And as coaches, we help them to create a kind of, if you will, template to start that creation process. I know that I've done that a lot over the years with my clients because grieving is great, but then there has to be a game plan after that and an execution.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
There definitely does. It's not like you grieve forever and ever and ever.
No.
Unless you have a gloss close to you, you know what I mean? Because sometimes,
yes.
you know, if you have a mom or dad or somebody or kid who dies, you know, that's,
right.
that's not something that you're going to rush in. I personally,
yeah.
I would not want to rush that process on somebody.
Absolutely not, well.
But in terms of just dealing with what life hands you, in terms of being able to function in the world, you know, with a disability or something. I had a client who came in not too long ago who has some physical disabilities as well,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't take as good a care as maybe she could have over the years for herself. And she was happy with the choices she made when she was younger. But
mm-hmm.
now she's sort of kicking herself because there's stuff that she can't do and she will never be able to do it again because of the damage created from basically abusing her body.
Oh.
You know, forcing it to do things that it really couldn't do
right.
early on. And
right.
so there's things like that that need to happen, you know, with the forgiveness and the grievance.
And so she went through that process?
Yes. She's,
and the outcome is good now? Yes?
I think she's still in the process of doing that process, but... But we're working on it and allowing her to focus on what she can do to help herself most definitely.
And while we're talking about that part of the subject, I wanted to touch on something that you mentioned to me, and I think it's a huge, huge thing that we should talk about as coaches and in the kind of therapy we do. We don't work on the same basis as a psychotherapist in that we have clients that come to see us that have major shifts in their awareness, their conscious and unconscious awareness, and major shifts in their entire, their lives, their chemistry, everything, and sometimes in one or two sessions.
Yeah, it can be that quick.
Isn't it? I mean, I know I've had that happen. You and I both have shared these stories before. It's just, it's amazing. It doesn't take years.
It doesn't need to take years at all because we're working with a conscious and unconscious mind. Milton Erickson used to always say that your client is your client because
mm-hmm.
their conscious and unconscious are out of rapport.
That's correct. The conscious and unconscious minds are both out of rapport with one another.
So our job as hypnotists, or people who practice the hypnotic arts.
Hypnotic arts, NLP, timeline therapy, right.
Yeah, is to bring the person's conscious and conscious together.
So
they're working in rapport with one another, so there's no longer that part of me feels this and part of me feels that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pushing and pulling them in all different directions. So they
right.
can unify and how they go towards meeting
right.
their goals, for sure.
Exactly.
Another thing, too, is like with things like anxiety or fear of flight and stuff like that, it's amazing to me how many drugs are handed out. In fact, I had a psych nurse here for work who was sort of laughing.
Oh, you were working with her?
Yeah, she was a client.
Uh-huh.
I worked with a few of them. Mm-hmm. And she was sort of laughing about the fact that, yeah, you know, you're right. A lot of the meds that we give, they don't work for any of that stuff. Dealing with anxiety, like fear of flight can be done in one session.
One session.
Mm-hmm.
Does everybody out there hear that? One session, fear of flying.
Yeah. There's lots of stuff that can be done. Presentation skills.
I just worked with a woman the other day on the presentation skills so that she was able to get up in front of her colleagues and deliver a presentation, more of a memo-type presentation. She was terrified about it, but she got up and delivered, and I also was working with somebody who's doing music in the studio.
Mm.
And I think she said that through the presentation skills I helped give her, it gave her the ease that she needed, and it shaved a half an hour off of her studio time. If anybody understands the recording industry, if you could shave a half an hour off your recording time in the studio, that's a lot of money. It equates to a lot of money because studio time costs money.
No kidding.
So that was a good thing. Hey, well, I've got you on the phone, and we've got people available to call in. Suzanne and I were talking about, what was it we were talking about? Compulsive behavior.
Yes, that's one of the things that I specialize in.
That's one of Suzanne's specialties. And one of the things that you were talking about was, let's see here, getting clients out of the box with the compulsive behavior. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right.
I'm trying to remember. I'm reading the notes here, and you were talking a lot about how important it is not to label, how important it is for them to come out of the box. And another thing, too, you mentioned with one of the compulsive behaviors, I don't want to talk about the client necessarily, but this particular client's compulsive behavior was one that could be litigiously getting them into predicament. Because our society just doesn't know how to deal with some compulsive behaviors other than to put people in jail and lock them away.
That's right.
And medicate them until there's practically no personality left. So
well,
did you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I got into this interesting area of sexual compulsives.
Sexual compulsives?
Yeah, in particular. I mean, I work with other compulsives, but these guys really have nowhere else to go. I mean, there's some therapists out there who work with it, but... in the work that I do,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times the guys, they've already tried that, and they have been on meds, and it didn't work, and they're still out there doing it. And generally what I have found to be true in most of the cases that I've worked with is that they were forced to do sexually inappropriate things before they would have been sexually active themselves. So we're talking about kids, I don't know, anywhere from... Well, the youngest that I worked with was 16 years old, and when he was sexually inappropriate, that all started when he was about 5.5 years old.
Yeah.
To the family. Although that's when they got him, so it might have started before that, who knows.
Mm-hmm.
He was in all these foster homes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But based on the older clients who I see who are adults now, and some of them are married or they have girlfriends, many of them have had sexually inappropriate things done to them by... the folks that they're supposed to respect in their lives, be it parents, grandparents, teachers, it happens way more than you'd ever want to admit to. In my case, I work with gentlemen, so I'm talking to males who've had this happen to them.
Right.
And
that's usually, isn't that usually what we find in that particular area of sexual compulsives, or generally the males?
Well, there are sexually compulsive females, not as many of them.
Okay.
But I would tend to tell you that they, too, have been sexually maligned in some way, shape, or form. And those are
mm-hmm.
the people who will become the happy ending masseuses that my clients might go to. Or it might be the women who get into prostitution and that kind of stuff.
That's what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you if it could be sexual addiction in a woman more so than a compulsion to, say, flash or something.
Yeah, it becomes, well... For the woman, it's really a matter of either getting back at the person who first hurt them
mm-hmm.
by making money
mm-hmm.
off of it, or it's looking for love in all the wrong places and not knowing how to get that touch that they need.
Absolutely. And what kind of treatment protocol have, you know, I mean, real quickly, and some of the things that you've done, like hypnosis, timeline therapy, you know, what kinds of things have you found have been very effective with these types of presenting problems?
It's a two-step process, really, the way that I work with these folks.
There you
go. The first thing is that they don't understand why they're doing it.
Well, of course not.
And
they're disconnected. They're in trance state.
Right. So they know they do it, and they don't know how to undo whatever it is that they're doing. So it's really important to get to the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And they may or may not remember the actual first instance. They'll probably remember some incidences. But what I found is there's usually a lot more than the ones they actually recall.
Right.
So the first thing that we need to do is figure out what is the cause. And then we have to figure out all the different things that happened in their lives that created this. Now, the other thing that can go hand in hand with this is many times these folks come from parents or families where there's not really a whole lot of love to give. In other words, you might be dealing with alcoholism, you might be dealing with a depressed mom, you might be dealing with people who just will give the material things but don't know how to be affectionate with their kids.
Correct.
So there's a disconnect in terms of how do you be appropriate in terms of being a loving person, in terms of a loving relationship?
Right.
So sometimes they need to learn that stuff as well. So you have all these things coming into coming together to create what would become a sexual compulsive. And usually it starts out benignly enough. You know, they'll be on the Internet. I was looking at pornographic magazines, but today it's usually on the Internet. And then they'll end up going for happy ending massages, and then they might end up getting escorts and going on that.
Happy ending massages are, in case anybody out there is not aware of it, it's basically they're going to ask for some fondling of the genital area.
Yes.
Because they're sexually stimulated by that.
Actually, a lot of times what the guys tell me is that they don't necessarily ask for it. The girls will ask them if they want it.
Oh.
And then they'll do it.
Yeah, when I was a massage therapist, I didn't provide that service.
And
I want to make that real clear.
Good for you. And then a lot of times it's licensed massage therapists who are actually doing this as well as the ones who aren't licensed, which I find kind of scary from
having been one for 20 years.
Yeah, 2 years, yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to get through that schooling, you know. So,
no.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. So it just gets to be more and more and more. And, again, it just gets more and more compulsive and takes up more and more of their time and more of their financial resources. Sometimes.
And it draws more and more of their energy away that they could be using to create much more abundant lives.
Absolutely, and their work and even with their families and all
and
the rest
with,
of it.
And with lives with greater outcome, with an outcome that's based more in the success of their own happiness and joy. And
true, because this is not fulfilling for them. It's empty.
Exactly.
You know, they get off on it, but it's empty. There's nothing there connection-wise, and they get that.
Right.
Well, the people who come in here to see me. So going back to my protocol, we have to, go to the cause. We have to figure out all the different things that we have to disconnect in terms of the traumas or the things that were done to them that were inappropriate. They have to do a lot of forgiveness work of the people who went over that boundary with them.
Yeah,
they have to forgive themselves for their behaviors and how it might have impacted both themselves and anyone in their lives.
And that's another thing that we need to bring out real quick so that everybody out there that's listening to what we're saying right now, our particular business is not one of blame.
No.
And we understand where things begin, but we don't, you know, want our clients to say, well, my parents did this to me or this, you know, these people did this to me. It's not one of blame. It's one of letting that go and allowing the vibration of forgiveness to be there. And I know that's hard for some people to swallow, you know, because some situations can be so horrific. But forgiveness doesn't mean that it means anything more than just letting go of that negative emotion, correct?
That's correct. It's clearing out all that negative emotion.
And holding on to the learning. And the learning is a positive thing. There is positive learning in everything.
Absolutely, there is.
You know,
and they need
That's sometimes hard for, you know, I find that a lot with you. It's hard, don't you find that, Daryl? It's hard for people to get that there's a positive learning.
Preserving the learnings in every situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's there for a learning.
Mm-hmm.
And once you preserve those learnings and allow that to happen, then you actually can move forward with that positive.
Absolutely.
Energy.
That's what we do. We don't, I don't know about you, Suzanne, but I've always felt like a lot of what I do is I help, and Daryl, we both have agreed on this before, we help people to keep them from feeling like they're imprisoned.
Exactly.
By their own symptomology, by their own condition. And oftentimes, I hate to say it, but by the labeling that goes on with the medical establishment and even family and friends that label them as... I was actually labeled at one point as obsessive compulsive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've had some work on obsessive compulsive disorder. My particular thing was related around a fixation with cleaning. I had to clean things a lot.
Uh-huh.
With, you know, I made a living out of that, though.
I bet it does.
Well, it's a positive learning thing.
Well,
be productive.
Yeah, well, yeah, it did. Well, the thing with obsessive compulsive and with just compulsive disorders, you have to begin to see when it becomes something. For me, it began to be something that was getting in the way of my experiencing joy in life because I saw so much filth and it got to where I couldn't relax and be comfortable, and I was constantly feeling hyperactive and compulsive about having to clean all the time.
That's the perfect definition.
Mm-hmm.
Something is not really a problem unless it's getting in the way of your everyday
mm-hmm.
things that you need to get done.
And I went to an actual traditional counselor, and she did some work with me, and it worked for a very short period of time, and then it came back again with a vengeance.
And then how do you get rid of it?
I went to a friend of mine who's a hypnotherapist and past life regressive therapist, and we did regressive therapy. And I was able to let that go with regressive therapy and hypnosis. And now that I've got timeline therapy I find is amazing.
It is a regressive therapy anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Timeline therapy is a regressive therapy. It's just a much more dissociated form. Would you agree?
It's so much more dissociated because, you know, hypnosis is dissociated. First of all, timeline therapy is a hypnotic state. Okay.
Right.
Uh-huh.
It's a neurolinguistic programming, which is also hypnosis. Now, so you are dissociated just by the fact that you are in that hypnotic state. You're
correct.
In a waking hypnotic state.
Right.
Anytime you're working in your unconscious mind, though, it works really, really fast.
Right. And the unconscious and conscious mind work together
with it. So it can work very, very, very quickly in order
mm-hmm.
to get rid of the problems and just blow them out. And that's the beauty of that particular therapy.
Yeah, that's right, because they do work together, the conscious and unconscious together. They work as a team interdependently, and they come together to let go of the negative emotions, limiting beliefs, limiting decisions.
That sounded like with a lot of my obsessive compulsives who have issues with...
Sexual compulsives?
Sexual compulsives, not... Well, maybe to some degree. Yeah, I guess it would fit there, too. Anger, a lot of anger issues.
Oh, yes.
You know?
Gosh,
and
yes.
So they're acting out all the anger. So if you're able to dislodge the anger and get them to a point where they don't want that anymore,
mm-hmm.
you've taken care of a lot of their problem right there.
Right.
In doing that.
Well, yeah. Anger's, I don't know, on the emotional scale, I think anger's probably...
What's the number? What's the first one you want to...
Right.
On the scale.
On the scale. That's the first negative emotion we want to get rid of because it's like...
Let go of, yeah.
Right.
Well, that can be very explosive. You have someone who's angry and you let go of something else first and they're still angry. You want to get into that anger first. It's very active.
Then you go farther back on your timeline
yep.
to the very first event. Which, when disconnected, would cause the anger to disappear if you were to know? Was it before, during, or after your birth? I've never heard that before. Yeah, I've done a lot of timeline therapy.
It's a very, very useful skill.
I'm sorry?
It's a very useful thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. So,
I actually didn't finish up my entire protocol. And the last protocol is the limiting beliefs. Because
which one?
Limiting beliefs.
Go with that.
Because the limiting beliefs is what keeps people stuck in that thing that they're doing.
That's right.
So... one of the first things that I always tell my clients when they walk in, especially when they're given some kind of label like a sex addict,
sexual
compulsives, or anorexic, you know, they'll have that for the rest of their life. So I'll say to them, well, how does it fly with you to become a non-sexual compulsive or non-anorexic? And they'll look at you as if you're absolutely out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
that's not the way that they have been taught that things can happen in the world. They were taught that they have to always be that label.
Right.
So I just tell them it is the action of not doing it, of not doing anorexia, not doing sexual addiction. That is what we are here to do.
That's right.
And then they're just like, wow. And it takes them a while for them to understand that they actually have the freedom with this work to not be that thing anymore and to live up to that label any longer. And that's very freeing. But there's beliefs that they have attended to in terms of getting them into those particular situations where they got those labels out there in the conventional world of medicine.
Right.
And they need to have the ability to make different decisions, not based on the decisions that they made when they were children, in many cases, which is what got them into the box of that limiting belief.
Right.
But make the decision as the adult, understanding that the child did the best that they could do, which brings me to another thing that I do, along with the forgiveness work. Is inner child work. It's really important for them to allow themselves to integrate that child that's still doing that protection of them, even though they're an adult to look at. The child is still running them. The unconscious mind is really a child's mind. So
well, that's the trance state that they're in.
Exactly. So
they're falling into, I mean, we all do it. Daryl and I, we were at a restaurant in Northern California, and we were having an argument, and I remember very distinctly, he looked me in the eyes, and he told me I was in trance state, and it was the oddest thing. It's just like what you're saying right now. I had fallen back into a role that I had played ever since I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
And it brought up all this stuff, and as soon as he told me I was in trance state, because we've been doing this work for so many years, I knew right away, you know, oh my goodness, and I just started to cry, you know, just like I had if I were 5 years old.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with the inner child.
Well,
that was my inner child.
Inner child. You know, that is the inner child doing her thing. And, you know, with my clients, I go through every single one of those protocols when they had a trauma or something done to them that was really painful. At every age, and we integrate every age back into them and let them know that that child
is
safe and family inside themselves and that they're going to take care of them for
right. I've done that work with clients, too. It's amazing, too, when you do this work for...
It's so healing for them. It's amazing.
Oh, it is. I mean, you know, and the thing is I've been doing this work for 8 years, and I still find every now and then that there's a little piece, you know, that comes through, and, you know, I have to work through it, and I do it. I'm lucky to have a life partner, Daryl, who is a therapist also, so that, you know, we can work through these things together.
Congratulations, it's wonderful.
Yeah, and people out there that don't have, you know, partners like I do, you have people like Daryl and us. We're here in the Portland, Seattle. We're on the West Coast. Suzanne with Dawning Visions is located in Boston.
Yes, I'm outside of Boston in Arlington.
Arlington.
Yeah, near Cambridge, you know, where Harvard University and MIT are, real close to there.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So anybody that's in Boston, or I don't know about you, I do work with clients all around the country, right now mostly just the West Coast, on the phone. A lot of the work I do on the phone. But I know most of what you do is in office.
A lot of it is in office. I've done some phone work. It is doable. But, yeah, I whenever I can, I like to see them in person because there's things that you can see in person that you can't really see on the phone.
That's correct.
But
you can get
some decent results for people over the phone.
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean, yeah, my preference would be to see everybody in person, too. But since it's not always possible, I've been able to develop a way of doing it. I've been doing psychic work on the phone for so many years. I think that for me it was just a natural transition. And Daryl's finding that it's getting very easy for him as well. Is that right?
Yeah.
You've been doing some work with some clients.
That's correct.
Recently.
Yeah.
And we're really enjoying it, by the way.
Yeah, you sound very excited. It's very excellent.
Thank you. So is there anybody out there that wants to talk with Suzanne or myself or Daryl about anything? If you do, don't hesitate to call. The numbers on BBS are, hang on. What are those numbers?
Right here.
Toll free. Go ahead.
877-270-8714, U.S. And the direct line, 530-413-4515.
Right.
And Canada, it's 888-228-4494.
Great.
And that's all we need right there.
I'd love to talk to Canada today.
Oh, no, this is a calling number. Those are calling. This is Station 1. I was Station 2. Sorry. Station 1 is 877-876-5227.
And in Canada,
815-9756.
There we go.
Direct line 530-876-3222.
3222.
A lot of numbers there.
That's right. But if you're listening to us on the Internet, you already know this because you have it on your screen.
That's correct.
That's correct. Hey, Suzanne, do you have any questions for Daryl and I?
What is it that you guys really seem to specialize in? What is the work that seems to be called to you? Because, you know, we don't really choose our clients. They kind of choose us. So who's called to work with you?
You want to answer yours first? You want me to?
Yeah, you could.
Me? Okay. Truly, I've been doing a lot of psychic coaching. I found right away when we got through, about 2 months ago, and we got back from Henderson, Nevada, from doing a trip that we had there with you to do some extended training. I just had this, it was overwhelming need to really get back into doing psychic work again. My intuitive abilities, I was born a third generation on one side and fourth on the other psychic. And for some reason, after the last barrage of trainings that we went through, my channels were so open that I just couldn't bear, you know, letting that go anymore. I had to get back out and do the work. So I started doing a lot of psychic work with people. And as I did the psychic work with them, I couldn't help myself but integrate everything that I had learned over the years, you know, as a hypnotherapist and doing timeline therapy and NLP. I just couldn't help but integrate that in because, you know, to do a reading with somebody is one thing, and I'm a true believer that what I read for them is based on the different dimensions that are active all the time, because I believe that in the quantum physics idea that every time we come up to a fork in the road and we go left, at some point we've created another dimension where we've gone right. So as I'm, you know, reading for people, I always tell them that anything I read for you has the option of having change created within it at any given point in time based on you, your choices, your decisions. So as I do the reading for them, you know, I often, and as often as I'm allowed to, because here again, you know, people have to come to you. You're saying what people are being drawn to me.
Yep.
I'm finding that people are being drawn to me that most of which are finding they're in transition mode. I haven't had one person that I've done coaching with, that I've done career coaching with. I've done a lot of career coaching, it seems like, lately, and psychic work with in the past 6 to 8 weeks that hasn't been in a huge transition state. Most of it's been career, I'm finding. Some relationship, but I'm finding a lot of people are going through career transitions right now. Daryl and I were talking about that. We really feel that a lot of people in the world right now are finding that they're just not attracted to these typical 9-to-5 jobs any longer. And you know, the beautiful thing is, as we do the work with them, the timeline work and, you know, coaching with them, we've helped them get rid of their limiting beliefs and things of that nature. They find that they can do anything they want to do to create money. I mean,
yeah, once you release the fear,
behind
actually going out and being yourself, and when you don't have fear, you can be yourself.
Well, you change the polarity from negative to positive, because that's all about energy generation.
You have all the tools and all the energy you need to create whatever you want.
Yep.
And there's a lot of, and everyone there has got all these talents and all these wonderful things that they have to offer. And once they realize that, they can go out and be this great person with their own talents, and they can do it on their own terms. And that's the future, I think.
I really truly agree with that. I believe that that's the future. He and I have been doing a lot of work, a lot of meditative work and things of that nature with the CDs that we're creating, the hypnosis CDs. I'm actually finding that we both have to be in a fairly tranced out state, you know. We are getting in touch with our higher power, our guides, in order to do that. And that's another thing I do when I'm doing coaching and when I'm doing psychic work both. I don't draw the line there. I don't draw the line and say, okay, I'm a coach now, so I'm not going to be working with your guides or mine to do this work. I'm just going to be, you know, very detached about this, and I'm just going to be a coach, by gosh. I don't do that. When I do coaching, when I do timeline when I do, psychic work, hypnosis, anything I do, I get in touch with my guides, their guides, the energy. You know, I look at the energy patterns visually with the person. I actually can feel the energies that they're feeling, so I know where their chakras are out of balance. I work with them to put their chakras back in balance. I give them a game plan. We get rid of negative emotions, limiting decisions, limiting beliefs. And like I told you about 2 weeks ago, I did a parts integration where I actually integrated somebody's incongruencies back into alignment so that their energy was back in alignment. This woman's presenting problem basically was that she needed to start working again and creating abundance in her life. And she had all of the skills. I can't say what she did for a living, but she has the degrees behind her to have six figures without it being any effort whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a matter of, you know, realigning her energies, getting rid of her limiting beliefs or negative emotions. And I did that in the first session because I intuited that, you know, boy, I mean, she actually came to me and was telling me that 2 days before she spoke with me, she was suicidal.
Well.
Yeah, and, you know, when I hear that, you know, I didn't wait at that point when she told me that. I said, well, how much time have you got? She said, I've got a couple hours. I said, good. Fasten your seatbelt, because here we go. And we're going to get rid of that right now, because, I mean, that's like driving by a fire and not using your cell phone to call the fire department. Now, I'd be remiss in my life if I didn't, you know, do what I know I need to do to help this person get through, because that's just not acceptable for me.
Well, definitely when you're dealing with suicidality, that's something you definitely need to be very aware of, a lot of things that go attendant with that in terms of what that can mean to the client.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I don't know if you can always do it right there in the moment, but to let them know that you can see them relatively quickly instead of putting them on hold for a month like
happens. Oh, God, no. No, I can't imagine that. I wanted to ask you something really quick. My mind works in circles. Talking about compulsive behavior,
mm-hmm.
I want to ask your opinion about something, because it's been something I've been tossing around in my mind for a long time. I think hypnosis and timeline therapy would be awesome with treating. How do you feel about alcoholism and NLP? How do you feel about alcoholism as far as a compulsive behavior and how what we do? Because I have worked with alcoholics before, and it's been very successful, but how do you feel about it?
I've had kind of a mixed bag with it, and
yeah.
I have actually, it's an interesting thing that you asked, because the addictions part of the sexual compulsive work actually comes from a scripting for alcohol and drug addicts, and it works really well for the sexual compulsives.
Really?
I've had kind of a mixed bag with alcoholics and drug addicts.
Uh-huh.
As far as I know, the drug addict that I worked with is doing okay. The alcoholic that I most recently worked with has been going through a really hard time trying to stay off her alcohol. This is a
right.
person who's 52 years old. Now she started using it pretty regularly to get rid of her negative emotions at 18. She was able to stay sober for 5 months without any problems. And then they went out for an anniversary dinner, she and her husband, and the waiter comes over and asks, any drinks here? And he said, no. And that's when she got really upset because, again, she was feeling like she was being treated like a child. Not really being and having that power taken away from her.
Go ahead, Daryl. Yes.
No, I can see how that is. If it sounds like she's taking the responsibility, but also it was her own responsibility when someone outside of her was trying to control her in that way. Maybe she was feeling rebellious.
Well, absolutely, and that's what she does, and I think that's what a lot of people do with alcohol and drug addiction. So they'll put in their feet and say, yeah, you think you're going to make me do this? I don't think so. You know, because they're actually
yeah.
teenagers. In many cases, when they mm-hmm. problems start up, you know, they kind of get stuck in that emotional place. So that's kind of what happened, along with the whole issue of, I just want to be normal. I just want to be able to be like everybody else. I don't want to not have to be able to have what I want to have.
Well, of course.
And, you know, she's realized that through the work that we did, she can pick it up and let it go pretty easily without any withdrawal systems. So
there you go.
A good thing and a bad thing, because she knows she can get rid of it, but you don't want them to go back to it. So those are different situations. So I have honestly had some pretty mixed results with it in terms of drug and alcoholism.
I kind of tend to think that oftentimes with the alcohol, I know for myself, I had a drinking problem at one time, and I noticed that it was worse in certain circumstances, and I truly feel in my heart of hearts, NLP helps me with that, because I was anchoring into a specific location that would trigger me. Yeah, and so once I identified that this particular place triggered me to, you know, because it was someplace I'd been comfortable in the past.
Right.
Basically, drinking more than I really, you know, it was appropriate for me to drink. When I was able to identify that, I anchored myself into something completely different with that location, and it went away.
Fabulous.
NLP.
There you go.
Neuro-linguistic programming, people. It's, you know, it's amazing what language help me
with
this.
You have to want it to be gone. See, that's the thing, Roxanne.
Say again?
You have to want it to be gone.
And I did want it to be gone.
And I'm not so certain that this particular client wants it to be gone.
Right.
You know, even to this day, I mean, she knows that it doesn't really do anything for her except for what it does for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That sounds good. Doesn't do anything for her except for what it does for her.
Exactly.
I love it. That's why we call it hypnosis, because we talk like this.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. No, that's good though. That's good though. But how many times does she see you?
She saw me for breakthrough programming, and she's been in, let's see, for a couple of sessions since then. You know, it's really funny. We had an appointment set up. I saw her before we went away for our training.
Mm-hmm.
It was fine all through the summer and everything else. And
mm-hmm.
It was in the end of August. They had the anniversary.
Right.
And in September, she was supposed to come in to see me and, you know, for follow-up. And she did not. And she gave me this message on my email. I wouldn't force you to see me right when you get back from your trip. That's crazy. So even though the appointment was set up that way.
Oh, I remember you told me about
that. And then,
And
so she didn't see me. So we made an appointment a couple weeks later, and she wouldn't come to see me again. And I think it was just that she felt like really embarrassed and stuff.
Why was she embarrassed?
Because she had slipped back.
And
didn't want to deal with that. So basically, we did a phone thing. She did write me about it, the slip back.
Uh-huh.
And this particular client also has a thing about getting thrown out of therapist offices. So part of it was about acting out.
I was going to say acting out, sure.
You know, and I told her straight away, I said, you know, you never have to be worried about being thrown out of this practice.
No.
It's not going to happen.
Because we don't judge.
That you need to do. You know, she's acted out with every other one of her therapists so far. Knock on wood, it hasn't happened here. Because she knows that, you know, whatever it is that you're going to do, what is that going to do to me? Nothing. You're only doing stuff to make yourself feel badly. You know, it's not going to make me nuts. It's going to make you nuts. You know, it's basically the way that I deal with it. It's not so different than I used to deal with some of the borderline personality disorder people that I work with. They tend to like to find out where you live because, you know, in traditional therapy, you're not supposed to know anything about your therapist, really.
Well, no, and I really still keep, like when we do work, I try to do all of my work in locations other than where we share our dwelling, Daryl and I. I rent office space by the day.
You
know?
Well, I work in my home. I choose to do it that way. And I share stories with them. You know?
Well, I've had incidences before, so I try to keep the domicile address a little under wraps that way.
I've never had an issue with that.
But I called it in, I'm sure. It was just a learning for me.
Well, a lot of people feel similarly, you know.
I'm sorry?
A lot of people feel similarly, but I refuse to be afraid of my clients, you know, what they're going to do.
Yeah, perception is projection.
You know,
that's true.
I screen them really thoroughly on the phone, and, you know, sometimes people think I'm nuts, but the people
you?
Who come here to see me.
Come on. You're the most grounded person I know.
Thank you. The people who come here to see me, they're here because they're in pain. They're not
that's
here
right.
to do things.
Same with me.
And
they
spend a lot
too.
Of money with me. Why would they want to do something to hurt me if that's where they're at? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. And that's my boundary that I have with them. It's just like, I'm not inviting people into my world to give them care in order for them to destroy me. That doesn't happen. You know?
Right.
It's just like, you come here because you're in pain. You've tried everything else. Nothing else has worked. This is your last hope. That's why you're here. And that's the only reason why you're here. because you're going to know that you're going to get very excellent care here, and you're going to be demanded to do what you need to do in order to clear this. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
I applaud you for that. I agree with that. Hey, Daryl, real quick, what is it you want to say about what you're doing as far as your coaching these days?
Oh, sorry, I'm standing way over here because...
That's okay. Just go ahead and share a little bit with us about what you're doing with your coaching career these days.
I've
been working in music for
how many years? I work with a lot of musicians since I'm a musician myself, a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Been doing that for 30 years. So I guess I would say opening up to helping people
mm-hmm.
bring their talents to, which is what I've learned for myself, is to open up to letting that flow through me. And allowing people to see that they have all these talents within them, where they can just allow that to come forth. And
mm-hmm.
there's sometimes they feel stuck, even though they've been doing something for a long time.
Right.
And so once they're able to release a lot of the negative emotions, they can bring forth that energy that's stuck. It's the stuckness that's holding that back. And that works with me in drumming. It's like a performance type of enhancement.
Do you find that musicians have compulsive behavior disorders on some levels, like with
drinking and drugs. Yeah, and I've had that problem too, and I've been NLP and
neurolinguistic programming.
Hypnosis is definitely.
And timeline therapy, right?
Made a world of change for me.
Amazing.
Yes, and I can go and gig and feel free from having to be plowed when I'm playing.
Congratulations.
You know,
yeah, well, yeah, and the focus work, too.
Focus and the hakalau, which helps getting up and it helps with stage situations.
Yeah.
So I've been teaching that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I teach drums, that's what I do, too, for a living.
Mm-hmm.
I work that in. I work all that type of stuff in within my teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great for performance of any type, whether it's speaking in front of people
yeah.
or playing your instrument. And also, I've been working with one of my... bandmates in weight loss using
mm-hmm.
some of the stuff we've learned for bringing up his metabolism and helping him and he's going to do a whole breakthrough session with us because he does have a lot of compulsive type things and,
correct and he's in career transition right now
too he wants to open up to music and with all the force he can possibly bring in and let go of a lot of the stuff that's holding him back
mm-hmm.
which he thinks he has to have. The belief that he has to have this and allow it to open up to what he really wants to do.
Right.
And this helps.
That's wonderful. I think it would be helpful if we explain what hakalau is, the learning state.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Good thing to talk about hakalau, which is we call the learning state.
Correct.
It comes out of the ancient Hawaiian study of Huna. That's where it comes from originally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's using your vision. If you were to look at something above your vision, just above your eyebrows, looking, say, a spot on the wall or something that you could focus on, and it's going to be above your normal vision,
right.
And focusing on that spot and putting all your focus on, now allow your peripheral to see the things that are on the side of you, on your peripheral vision, as you're focusing on that spot. And allow your peripheral vision to go out and as far out as you can possibly go. And as you keep practicing this, eventually you'll be able to pull your peripheral all the way around, all around your head, behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And this allows it a relaxation, and it allows a focus, and also whatever you're doing at the time, you're going to be able to hold in your memory better. It's great for learning and for taking tests and for performance.
Very cool.
Absolutely. I think it also kind of helps to bring your energy, your actual auric energy fields in alignment when you do that. So I know Saturday when I got up on stage and sang, we went and Daryl and I have been kind of dabbling at you know, doing some work at music and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When I got up and I had to sing, that was what I did before I got up there. I still was a little anxious, though. We forgot to do the anxiety paradigm.
Oh, well, a nice little performance. Anchor would have been nice, too, for you.
Yeah, an anchor.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I
always do that for performance people.
Anchor?
In fact, I do that for everyone. I give everyone a resource anchor so they can feel calm and good about things.
Yes, anchoring is part of NLP, neurolinguistic programming, and I think it's the first thing that we really learn, right?
Pretty close, too.
And I think it's one of my favorite things to always just, you know, right out of the box, do that with people, is it gives them choices. I know that, I don't know about you, but how I feel about what I do as a coach and a trainer is I give people life choices.
Well,
you know?
You help them understand that they do have choice.
Yeah. You, everybody out there that's hearing this, please understand you do have choices. And that's what we're here to help you get in touch with and create are those choices through timeline therapy, neurolinguistic programming, hypnosis, and everything else that we have. We've got so much knowledge between the three of us, I swear. You know?
Different ways to come in.
Huh?
That's right. We all have different backgrounds and things to add. That's right.
And that's beautiful, though. That's what makes us an individual, but that's also what makes us so amazing and special in this world, the things that we bring. You know, and Daryl and I are getting more into the hypnosis, and we're doing the CDs, and we're studying sacred geometry and using that sacred geometry. We're using the sacred geometry to help. Thank you very much.
We're running out of time here. And
Suzanne?
Yes.
Dawning Visions.
Yes.
Dawningvisions.com.
Dawningvisions.com or dawningvisions.net will get you to my site. There's a lot of newsletters up there and information.
And createabundance.net, createabundance.net. That's Daryl and Roxanne.
And we'll have a link to Dawning Visions on there, on the website.
On our website. Okay. Is that good with you, Suzanne?
Oh, that's absolutely excellent. Thank you very much.
And we appreciate you coming on, Suzanne.
Yes.
This has been awesome. You did have a lot of good things to say.
Oh,
you're
thank
doing
you
great
so
work
much.
Out there.
Oh,
keep
you guys
doing
are very
it.
Welcome. Thank you for having me on. It's been my pleasure.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
You out there, I hope you got that. Dawning Visions and createabundancenow.net. Roxanne Brown and Daryl Gray.
Thanks very much, guys, out there.
You guys have
fun.
Have a wonderful day, and call us with any questions you have, comments, email us. We're here for you. All right? Thank you.